We're holding on the top line of Zion Amud Aleph for the last two words of the line. We've been discussing the question we started the other day, well, all the way back in the Mishnah, actually, discussing the concept of yodos, that you make a partial statement of a neder, then it counts as a complete statement. And we went through all the details of that, and then that brought us to the question of whether yodos apply in other areas of halacha as well. We discussed, the first one we discussed was Gittin. We actually tried to use that as a proof towards things of Nedarim. Then we talked about Kiddushin, and we talked about Peah. So now, another one. Yes, Yad L'Tzadokah, and Yad L'Tzadokah, and in some Gersois they have Bori Rava, or Bori Rapapa, whatever it is. So either it's one of them, or it's just some of the Gemara asking. That, does the concept of Yad apply as far as Tzadokah? Again, as the Gemara is going to
mention that.
So we talked yesterday. We talked about Peah. So yes, there is the long braisa from Rosh Hashanah that mentions all the various things that Baal Ta'achar applies to. Does mention tzedakah. We're going to talk about that in a second. So on one hand, there is that. The Ran points out a better question is once we have the question about Peah, what do we need the question about tzedakah? Isn't tzedakah and Peah essentially the same thing? They're both gifts to Anim. So the Ran quotes his Rebbe that maybe the difference is that Peah is something that the Torah absolutely obligates you in, where tzedakah maybe not so much. There's a shear in Peah. Okay, so the Ran asks on that. I mean, there is the basic chiyuv of tzedakah is equally much a mitzvah on you as the basic mitzvah of Peah. In fact, with tzedakah also there's a minimum shear. The Gemara mentions Ran doesn't mention it over here, but the Gemara mentions in Bava Basra that a person should always give at least one third of a shekel for tzedakah every year. And the Rambam says flat out, a third of a shekel. I don't know, what is a shekel in modern, dollar maybe, I don't know. Anyway, and the Rambam flat out says if a person gives less than that, he's not Makayim the mitzvah of tzedakah.
Per year.
Yeah. So there is
a
certain...
He's the only one that says that?
He takes it from that Gemara, but the Gemara doesn't actually say, as far as I recall, that you're not actually yotze. The Gemara just said the person should not give less than a third of a shekel, learned from Pasuk and Nehemiah. But the idea that you're not yotze with less than that, either, I don't know if that's the Rambam's chiddush or if he got that from someplace. No, Asher Ta'aser primarily is talking about Meiser. It's talking about Meiser, the Meiser from produce. If a person doesn't have a field, then there's no. I mean, the idea of Meister from your possessions is a really ancient one. It goes all the way back to Yaakov, after Enu Loch. But it's not an absolute. It's not necessarily. I mean, there is a chiyuv of it. It's a question whether it's minatoro or midrabanan. But whatever it is, it's part of the general thing of tzedakah. Anyway, so the question still remains: if we have Peah, what do we need? Meister of produce is minatoro. Meister of money is not necessarily. Yeah, Meiser, money, of your income, whatever, yeah. Anyway, so the Ran himself says, that's fine, it's just the Rapapa or whoever it was had the same question at two different times. One time he was wondering about Peah, and another time he was wondering about tzedakah, not necessarily related to each other, unlike the Ran's teacher's explanation would be that first he asked about Peah, and then if he's going to say that, yes, you have the Peah, because it's more stringent, then does it the same thing also apply to tzedakah? Okay. Again, the question is, Heshi Dami, what's the case we're talking about? Ilema Da'ama Hadin Zuzal Tzedakah Bahadin Nami. Is it that he says this Zuz should be for Tzedakah and this one also? Well, then I would Tzedakah ask me. Again, like we said in previous cases, that's an actual declaration of Tzedakah. That's not even a Yad. That's more than a Yad. There's no question that works. Elosh Ben Da'ama Hadin Velayama Nami. Again, it's similar to the Peah thing. He said this coin is for Tzedakah and this one and this one. He doesn't say anything else. He doesn't say Nami. So, my, Hodin Nami Tzedakah Kama, does he mean this one is also for Tzedakah? Oduma, my, but Hodin Nami, then of course, the Alma Kama. Or maybe he just means this one is for Tzedakah, this one is for my household expenses. Then of course, for household expenses, Baalma. Then of course, Baalma, just for household expenses, Kama. And he's just saying, Vidiburu, who do I ask? He didn't finish a sentence. Now, what are the two sides of the question? Me, I'm reading Kibin de Itkesh le Korbanos. On the one hand, tzedakah is, there's a hekesh between that and Korbanos. Dichtik beficha zu tzedakah. The same long pasuk and the braisa that we had about all the cases where Baal Ta'achar applies to. The last words of the pasuk are, asher divarta beficha. And the Gemara explains there that the word beficha comes to teach us that if you pledge tzedakah, then you have an iser of Baal Ta'achar if you delay it. And in fact, there the Gemara says you don't even have the three regalim leeway, because tzedakah, there are always anim available. Korbanos, the Eivishter wasn't going to be matriach you to make a special trip to the Beis Hamikdash for your korban, but the tzedakah you have to give as soon as possible. So that's also the Gevurah Kamesirat al Hedyet is primarily talking about if you're declaring something hektish, that your declaration of it hektish makes it automatically the property of hektish, just as if you had done mesira with a private party. Actually, there is a bit of discussion over here, because the Ramah brings an opinion that if you just mentally decide to give a certain amount of tzedakah, then it's already enough. So what is the Gemara asking about Yodos? Yodos is obviously more than Machshava, and therefore the answer that various Achronim give is that it depends how you intended it to be chal. Yes, if you thought of the tzedakah and you intended that your machshava alone should create the chiyuv, then fine, that's all you need. You don't even need a verbal declaration. But if you meant that you're only going to declare, you're only going to allow it to take effect with a verbal declaration, well, then you have the question, what kind of verbal declaration?
If you don't say or think anything,
then preposterous, you thought, so then it would, then preposterous, you thought, and that would be it, don't know. Anyway, so on the one hand, tzedakah is compared to korbanos. B'ficha zu tzedakah. Now, how does the word b'ficha come to mean tzedakah? So Rashi in Rosh Hashanah over there just says that it's because you have an extra word in the pasuk, so you darshan it. Over here, the Mefarish, maybe Rashi, maybe whoever it is, says a different thing. You have a pasuk that says that you have a pasuk in Yeshaya that associates the word tzedakah with mouth. Yetzi miti tzedakah. So therefore, you see that b'ficha can refer to tzedakah. Okay, so on the one hand, so then in that case, ma korbanos yesh lahen yad. So just like with korbanos, there is a yad, and there's no question about that, because korbanos are a type of neder. Ah, tzedakah yesh la yad, tzedakah also, then a yad would work. Adumal bal ta'acha u de'itkash, or maybe it's only compared as far as bal ta'acha, but not as far as anything else. Again, the same thing as we said yesterday, that even though in hekesh lemechta, you can't do a piecemeal hekesh, or a hekesh, it's all or nothing, but the pasuk doesn't actually say the word tzedakah. It just says beficha, and midarshan it to mean tzedakah. Still left unresolved. At the end, actually, by the way, I mentioned yesterday a couple of things. What the halacha was in these various cases. Some of the things I said were not quite correct. When we get to the end of the sugya, the last case of Yad over here, we'll run down. The Ran has a rundown about all of them. What the halacha is.
How do we know pisa means
That's what we said. In Rosh Hashanah, Rashi just says because you have an extra word, so you darshan it for that. Over here, the Mefarish says because P is associated with tzedakah.
Yeah, but that's what I'm asking. Why is it associated with...
Because you have a pasuk, Yetzi mipi tzedakah. The Eivishter says, comes forth from my mouth. Okay. Next question. Yesh yad lahefker, adilma ein yad lahefker. Is there a yad when it comes to declaring something hefker or not? Then we'll ask, wait a minute, hein tzedakah. What do you need to ask a separate question? Isn't hefker a kind of tzedakah? B'chura, when you're declaring something hefker, is it you're declaring the poor people can have it? So then that's effectively a kind of tzedakah. That's the answer. Imtim tzolaymer kamar. The Gemara is taking it as imtim tzolaymer. If you're going to say that by tzedakah, there can be a yad. Imtim tzolaymer, yes, yad l'tzedakah. And why would we say that to ein hekesh l'mechta? Because, as we said before, you can't have a hekesh halfway. It's an all or nothing deal. So if there's a hekesh between korbanos and tzedakah, then it means that it applies also as far as yad. So if we say yesh yad l'tzedakah de'en hekesh l'mechta, hefker mi amrin and hein tzedakah. So do we say then that hefker is another form of tzedakah? Or duma, or maybe not. Like you said, shiny tzedakah, the tzedakah lechazi el laniim. Tzedakah is only suitable for the poor. Abel hefker bein laniim bein lashirim. Hefker is something that can go both to the poor and to the rich. So maybe it's a different category.
Imtim
Tzolaymer Kamar. We're saying it as an Imtim Tzolaymer. namely, Imtim Tzolaymer, if you're going to say that Yesh Yad, that if you're going to say Yesh Yad L'Tzedakah, why and Hekash Shemechta, Hefka Miyamin and Hainet Tzedakah, yeah. The reason why it's repeating Imtim Tzolaymer because it's Imtim Tzolaymer Ka'amar. We're saying it as an Imtim Tzolaymer. Let's spell out what is the Imtim Tzolaymer. Imtim Tzolaymer, Tzedakah, Yesh Yad L'Tzedakah, etc.
What's the point of saying we're going to express it as an
intim? Well, actually, it has a very great importance because, for one thing, the Rambam holds that you always pass him like an intim tzolomer in the Gemara. Therefore, when it comes to the previous case of tzedakah, the Rambam would say, therefore, we have to say that the second coin is tzedakah because the Gemara has said intim tzolomer. The Gemara has used that assumption as a basis for another question. And the Rambam holds you're always pass him that way.
Is the only one who holds that?
We'll talk soon what the Ram says. We'll go through soon. There's a long round over here, Indian halacha that runs down all the details. Anyway, Tosfos points out that even if the fact is the Gemara ends up answering that hefker is both for the poor and for the rich, but usually why would you declare something hefker in order for the aniyim to be able to get it? That's why the Gemara thought the possibility that hefker is a kind of tzedakah. Actually, the Rambam talks about, rather, that when you declare something hefker, the Rambam talks about that more, it's chal as a matter, not so much of tzedakah, but of a neder. I mean, tzedakah itself, when you declare something tzedakah, is also a form of a neder. So he holds that when you declare something hefker, it's a form of neder. Therefore, for example, you can't retract from it. You can go yourself and be rezoicha in the object from hefker, but you can't undo. You can't say, you know what? I didn't mean to declare it hefker. I'm going to say I never intended to give it up. Once it's said, it's said. No, what shalai b'panav? He himself declared it hefker. Actually, there's an interesting detail in that the Beit Yosef points out that if we're saying, as the Rambam is saying, and as we get from our sugya, that hefker is a type of tzedakah, which in turn is a type of neder, whatever, then it means just like you can't make a neder through a shliach, so you also can't declare something hefker through a shliach, and therefore he said this is why when it comes to bitul chametz, you can't do bitul chametz through a shliach. To check for chametz or to burn your chametz or whatever that you can have a shliach do for you. But when it comes to the bittul, you yourself have to say kol chamira, because just like you can't appoint somebody to make a neder for you, so you can't appoint somebody to declare something hefker for you. Okay. Next question. Boy Ravina, yesh yad lebeis akise oloi. How about when it comes to designating a place as a bathroom? Now, the din is you're not allowed to daven in a bathroom. And in fact, what we're saying over here is, where the Gemara is going to address this point in a minute, but right now the initial assumption is that if you even just verbally designate this place is going to be used for a bathroom, even though nobody's actually ever used it yet, already it becomes also to daven there, or say Krishna, or whatever there. But now,
even if there's no
excrement there, and even if nobody's ever used it. It's called Azmana. That we're going to get back to in a second. We're going to get back to
it's
not really a form of neder, but it's a form of that once you've declared it a bathroom, then it becomes miustik. It becomes a disgusting place to daven in. So again, okay, Krishma is deraisa. Tefillah, at least the actual nusach of tefillah is derabanan. So usually when we talk about these things, we talk in terms of Krishma, which is the bigger thing. And Shulchan Aruch also, these dinim about Beis HaKiseh and Beis HaMerchatz and all are included in Hilchos Krishma, probably also as a practical matter. Krishma has said before Shemana Esrei, so therefore they come up first when it comes to Krishma. But yeah, the same thing applies to both, yeah. Anyway, so again, is there a yad in that or not? So again, Hefi Dami, what are we talking about? Is it that he says this house, this room, should be a Beis HaKiseh and this one also? Well, of course, Beis HaKiseh Nami Hava, there's no question. The second one is a Beis HaKiseh. What's asked? Again, he says, and this one, but without saying also. So, my hodein d'omar. What does it mean when he says, and this? V'hodein nami besakise. Does it mean this one also I intend to designate as besakise? Or maybe he just means, and this one will be used for other purposes. So what does this mean then? It comes out that Ravina takes it as a given that just hazmana alone is effective to make it a Beis HaKiseh, to make it also to say Krishma. His only question is about Yad. But is that so? We actually find that Ravina had a question on this point. Is minu lebeis akise mahu? Is minu lebeis amerchas mahu? He asks, if a person verbally designates this is going to be a beis akise or this is going to be a beis amerchas, what happens? Zimun moyol or ein zimun moyol? Does his verbal declaration b'chlal have an effect or not? But the Hagoyes Agro, by the way, takes out over here the words his minu lebeis amerchas, and the reason is because there's also a short discussion about this in Shabbos. The Gemara discusses this point about Hasmana over there, and the Gemara starts out with when Ravina asks this question over there, the Gemara starts with the assumption that the same question he has about a Beis Kise, he would also have about a Beis Amechot, the bathhouse. And then the Gemara ends up saying that no, the question is probably more only about a Beis Kise, because a Beis Kise is more of a disgusting thing, it's more miyusik. A Beis Amechot, the problem is more the fact that people are undressed in there, it's a matter of tzniyus. Whereas a Beis Kise is a matter of excrement, which is a matter of
tzniyus. So it's two different measures.
So it's two different things. So over here it could some Mefarshim say fine, we can still keep his minhag Beis Amechot Mahu over here because fine, the Gemara is going according to the Gemara over here is going according to its initial assumption there in Shabbos that the question included both. But since the Maskana is that it's only about Beis Kise, not Beis Amechot, then this is why the girl takes out his minhag Beis Amechot. Anyway. So what is Ravina asking about Yad when he's not even sure whether Hasmana itself is effective? And the answer is Chodah because Chodah coming by Yilei. He's asking one question based on the other. Again, it's sort of an Imtim Tzoloima situation. First of all, Zimun Moyo La'in Zimun Moyo. Number one, B'chal does Zimun help. If I verbally designate this place is going to be a Beit HaKisei, is that even effective? And Imtim Tzoloima, Yesh Zimun, and furthermore, even if you say that Zimun is effective, then Yesh Yad or Ein Yad. Then you have the question whether a Yad type of Zimun, and this one, without saying, and this one will also be, whether that's effective. And the answer is, on all of them, Tiboyle. They're left as a question. Tiboyle, the usual expression throughout Shas, for it would be Teku. This is an example of Loshen Nedarim Mishuna, that as we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, that the wording in Masechta Nedarim a lot of times is unusual compared to the rest of Shas, but it means that all of these questions about Kiddushin, about Peya, etc., are all left as Teku. So what does that
use Tiboyle?
What?
Why do we use that?
So the Yerushalmi uses it. The Yerushalmi uses Tiboyle. So this is one of the Yerushalmi type expressions that we find in Nedarim. And again, like we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, the various theories why it's so, maybe because Rav Ashi didn't have a chance to re-edit this and then bring it in line with everything else, or maybe because they looped it more and copied it out more in Eretz Yisrael than in Bavel, whatever the various reasons. Yeah. So what's the bottom line as far as halacha? So the Ran discusses like this. Kiddushin, it's a suffix d'oraisa. Therefore, we have to be machmer on that. And everybody agrees on that. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Ishus also that it's a suffix in the case of Yad with Kiddushin.
So she needs to get
misafik, yeah. The cases of Peya and Stucker. So the Ran brings over here two different possibilities. He says that the Rashba and the Ramban say that both of them should be l'chumra. That I mentioned yesterday about Peya that I thought it was a matter of Hamoritz Mechaber Avaraya. I was wrong about that, actually. The Rambam also passes it l'chumra and says that, and the Kesef Mishnah says, since it's possibly Momen Aniyim, then you got to be Machmer on it. The Ran himself says I don't necessarily agree with that. It is ultimately a matter of mamon, not necessarily should be so machmer on it. Especially when and with Hefker, the next thing for sure, Hefker actually the Rambam is makel on also. Especially because we said that Hefker ultimately is not only for the poor, it's for the rich also. So he argues that just because it's a suffix, whether it's mamon of anim, that's called a suffix of mamon. It's not a suffix of iser v'heter where you'd have to be machmer. Like with kedushin, it's a suffix of mamon. A suffix of mamon you can be more makel on.
Even when it's on anim.
That's what the Ran is saying. Yeah. And then as far as the Beis HaKisei, it is a matter of dirabanan. So the Ran himself says, therefore we should say sveka dirabanan l'kula. We should be makel on it. The Rambam paskins, and from that it comes in Shulchan Aruch, that you should be l'chatchila, you should be machmir, you shouldn't daven in such a place, or say kriyashma or whatever in such a place, but if you did, then you yotze. And that's halacha. One more thing, by the way, not really so directly related to this, but a little bit indirectly related, is sometimes you have nowadays where shul is renovated and you have a place that used to be the bathroom now becomes part of the shul. That's in 1770, when they did the last renovations there 25 years ago. That's what they did. So there is some discussion among the Achronim about the propriety of that. Lamaisa, of course, they did it. Obviously, they had the halakhic justification for it. And Lamaisa, the places where they have all the every 15-minute minyanim are pretty much that area. And there's a few possibilities. One of them being that the klal, a number of Achronim talk about, that our modern bathrooms may not even have the full status of a Beis HaKisseh of the times of the Gemara anyway, because the Beis HaKisseh of those times was like a porta potty nowadays. The stuff stays there. Whereas nowadays, that was their Beis HaKisseh of those days. It was there permanently, pretty much. Whereas nowadays, you flush it right away, and then therefore maybe there's more. It's cleaner, right? So therefore, fine. You shouldn't don't go say Kriyat Shema in an actual modern day bathroom. But at least you've renovated it, and you've completely rebuilt everything. Then maybe then it's not an issue. Now, continuing on the topic of Yodos, we have the last case in the Mishnah. You have we have the various cases in the Mishnah where a person said to somebody else, Mudrani Mimcha, Mufrashni Mimcha, and we talked about a few days ago about what exactly those accomplish. Do those accomplish anything by themselves, or do you need, together with them, Shani Ochaloch in order to accomplish anything? Then the Mishnah said one more. Menudani Loch, what if Reuben says to Shimon, I am Menuda to you? Then we said Rebbe Akiva was choichach b'zela hafme. He was like leaning towards, and we said choichach, we said the various possibilities, and it's like he's scratching or biting his lip or whatever, like I'm thinking to be machmer on this, but I'm not really sure. Yeah. So, Amar Abaya, moide Rebbe Akiva le'inyan malchus she'en aloike. Rebbe Akiva would agree that even if the person says menuda ani loch, fine, Rebbe Akiva is thinking maybe to be machmer on the guy, but he would agree that you don't actually give the guy malchus if he's over on such a neder.
How does
Rebbe
know that?
Well, because he says, given that Rebbe Akiva is only Rebbe Akiva has a suffix on it, right? He's choichich lahachmer. He's thinking maybe to be machmer, maybe not. You can't give a person malchus based on a suffix. So mainly the fact that it's a yad, no problem. We said the other day, we quoted the other day from the Ran had said that we had to have a strong basis for the idea of yodis of nedarim, because you could get malchus for being over your neder, and you can't give a person malchus based on a weak basis. But so as far as it being a yad is not an issue, but since Rebbe Akiva himself is not sure whether it even counts as a yad, then he can't give a person malchus on that basis.
That's the meaning of the word chesed means. Sure.
That's what it means, though. It means he's not sure, because otherwise it would have said he's machmer. That's the point. Even if you give him asura, it would be effectively asura suffik. It would be a suffik whether he's actually chayiv malchus for it or not. And why is that? The imken nisni Rebbe Akiva machmir, because otherwise the Gemara should have said flat out Rebbe Akiva is machmir, and then we would say he's machmir, meaning he considers it a full fledged neder. But by saying choichich lahachmir just means that he has a suffik.
You can say he's making also by default.
Okay, but that's why I was saying you shouldn't keep the nether, but if you didn't, you and I are not high malchus for it. All of the various mephoshim, by the way, discuss the different possibilities, whether if we say that menuda ani loch counts, does it have to be, and that goes together with the next piece of Gemara over here, does it have to be like the other one that you have to have along with it shani ocheloch, shani toimoch, that you have to have some kind of actual specific hanah attached to it?
Like the other
ones. There is more of a possibility than not, because Tosfos brings over here that the difference is all the other things when you say mudrani mimcha mufrashni mimcha, fine, by themselves you could argue that those don't mean anything, so you have to clarify what those mean. And they could mean I'm not going to stand in your four amas, etc., as we talked about the other day. But if a person says menudani loch, which means I am in nidui to you, a person usually would not mention nidui about himself. If he just meant to say, I'm not going to stand within your four amas, or I'm not going to allow you to stand within my four amas or whatever, you wouldn't use a word of nidui. You wouldn't use a word No, minuda anilach is meloshin nidui. Minuda is meloshin nidui. So therefore it's more logical to say that if he says menuda ani loch, it means it would mean that even without shani ocheloch that it has an effect. Okay, Amar Papa, the Nadinam, now there's a few different possibilities of how the person exactly can say it. And what's going to become important in this Sogya is that there are a few different synonyms for excommunication, for Nidui. We learned about this in Moed Katan. You have Nidui, you have Shamta, and you also have Cherim, which the Gemara is not really going to talk about over here. But there's for our purposes, there's Nidui and there's Shamta.
Shamta, what is Nidui?
Shamta is another type of Nidui. Well, that's what we're going to say in a second. That the word nidui actually has a double meaning, whereas the word shamta has a single meaning. But wait, we'll get there. Okay, the mafarish says over here that shamta is a weaker kind of excommunication than nidui. But none of the other mafarishim seem to accept that concept. So no, rather it's like this. Benadinam amar papa, benadinam imcha. If Reuben says to Shimon, I am nadina from you. Then everybody would agree that he's Osir, because the word Nadina implies the word Nadina clearly implies a separation. So no, that's what we're going to get to. Menudah in a minute. We're going to get to. No, but there is a difference. The word Nadina is the word Nadina literally implies I am in Nidri. Actually it doesn't. It's the other way around. No, Nadina Mimcha means. Nadina mimcha means actually it'll mean I'm separated from you, which means in other words that let's clarify like this. The word nidui and any of the words derived from it can have a double meaning. They can mean nidui as in cherem, that we're also to have any contact with each other, or they can mean the lashon nava nadti ba'aretz, that you'll be a wanderer and a fugitive in the land, meaning that we'll stay apart. Which there, if it means that, then it has effectively the same meaning as meruchakni mimcha from the Mishnah. With meruchakni mimcha, we said by itself is nothing unless you add shani urchalach. Okay, according to the Rambam, means that we won't talk with each other, whatever. But The point is, does we have to figure out whether it means nidui or whether it just means separation.
Nidui means...
Nidui is a type of cherem, it's a type of excommunication.
It's also a separation.
But it's a stronger lashon.
In which way?
On the one hand, it's a stronger lashon, nidui. On the other hand... On the other hand, a person who is in nidui to somebody, if one person says to another, I'm in nidui to you, not necessarily does that create an issue between them.
What is it?
It might not. That's the thing. Where that, as we go through over here, we'll see. It might not necessarily be anything. If he says I'm separating myself from you, then shani yochalach shani toyim loch, then that creates an issue. I'm separating myself from being able to have any hanah from your food, as opposed to nidui, maybe not. Let's go through this couple of lines of Gemara, and then we'll see it more clearly. So I'm going to pop up. But nadina mimcha, if he says I am nadina from you, de kolam ole tligi de osu, then everybody would agree that's 100% osu. There's not even choichach lahachmir. There's no question. It's a full fledged neder, and again, it would have to be included with shani urchalach. Nadina would imply, the word nadina would not imply I am in nidui. The word nadina would imply I am separated from you, which is the same as meruchakni mimcha from earlier in the Mishnah. Separated, distance, whatever, same thing. Nadina would mean the same thing.
You keep the communication by distance, but...
Fine, we have three expressions in the Mishnah. Udrani, Mufrashni, Meruchakni. Okay, so we said the other day on Daf Hei that each of them has a meaning. Udrani means that I won't talk with you, Mufrashni means I won't do business with you, Meruchakni means I won't stand in your Daladamas. Nadina would be the equivalent of saying I won't stand in your Daladamas. And then, therefore, if on top of that you say Shani Urchalach, then that makes it a full-fledged neder, well, a yadla neder, that I'm not going to eat your food.
By itself,
well, that's the thing. That depends on what the discussion was the other day, whether we say that by itself it has no meaning at all because it can mean various possible things, or according to the Rambam, the explanation of the Gemara, it actually meant that he's barred from being within 4 hours of the guy. So if he says Nadina, then there's that. On the other hand, Mishamasna Mimcha, On the other hand, if he says, I am in Shamta to you, then there's no question. Even if he says, Shani Oichalach, then there's no Issur. Why? Because the Issur has to be, you're saying a Lashon of a Neder. You say, I have to be saying a Lashon of a Neder. Shamta is a Lashon of excommunication. That's not the same thing. You're saying I'm excommunicating myself to you, as far as that I won't eat your food. But that's not a form of a neder. A form of a neder.
The Dina is a neder.
It's asur. The asur meaning, in other words, because when you combine it together with shani oichalach, that makes a yad la neder. Mishamachna, we're saying is not an issue. Because you're declaring yourself. The Ram says, "Ein zeh loshen neder, ela loshen shamta." It's not a loshen of a neder. It's a loshen of excommunication. And therefore, it doesn't have an effect. I don't have the ability to put myself in excommunication to you. So therefore, l'kulam shari. So therefore, according to everybody, it would be mutter. The Tosfos also points out similarly the word mishamasna is a lashon of a curse, like. So he's saying, like, I'm putting myself under a curse to you, but again, that's not a neder. The Rosh points out one other possibility. The Rosh points out that it may be that we're going to learn as we go through the Masechta that the Nedarim Hochanach Lashon Bnei Adam. When it comes to the definitions of things in Nedarim, usually you go according to the common definition of things.
The common definition.
So the thing is, in common language in those days, when people wanted to speak of somebody being excommunicated, they would use the word Shamta. They would not use the word Nidri. Therefore, the argument is that if he said Nadina, then we are not going to understand it to mean excommunication because nobody uses it in that sense. Whereas if you say Shamta, Shamta is what everybody calls excommunication, and again, that has no effect because it's not a real neder. It's not a lashon of neder. But my plea, what is the machloekas Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim? The menudani law, the lashon that we said in our Mishnah, I am menuda to you. Namely, the Rabbi Akiva sava lishna didin du yahu. Rabbi Akiva holds, therefore, that it is a lashon of separating, of nod tiyabarat, and therefore that's just the equivalent of meruchakni. Rabbanan savi lishna didin mishamachna, where the Rabbanan would hold that it's the equivalent of saying, I'm under shamta to you. And since the person saying, I'm under shamta to you, was saying at this point, has no effect, then that's it, it has no effect. That would be the machlok, because that's why Rabbi Akiva is choichich b'zeh l'chachmer, because he figures, yes, it might mean a lashon of nidri, in which case it's worthless, or it might be a lashon of separation, in which case it has validity. Therefore, he says, because I'm not sure, keep the neder, but you won't get malchus for it. Whereas the Rabbanan says, there's nothing even to worry about. It's not a matter, it's not a lashon of nidri at all. It's a lashon of separation.
Meaning what?
No, sorry, it's not a lashon of separation, it's a lashon of nidri, it's a lashon of excommunication. And a lashon of excommunication doesn't work as a neder. The Gemara says a pligah de Rav Chisda. This explanation that Abaya said contradicts, it disagrees with what Rav Chisda says. Dahu gavra de Omar, because you had a case where somebody said mishamasna benichse de brei de Rav Yirmiyah ba'Aba. I am under shamta in the nechosim of the son of Rav Yirmiyah ba'Aba. So he meant to say, in other words, I'm forbidding myself to have any hanaf from his nechassim. Also, l'kamei de Rav Chisda. So he came to Rav Chisda to ask, is he in fact bound by this neder? Amalei, Rav Chisda told him, lest the choshla l'hadr Rav Akiva. Don't worry, nobody is concerned about Rav Akiva's opinion. Rav Akiva may say in the Mishnah that he's choshech b'zeh l'achmer. Nobody in practice is worried about that. We say we pass him like the chachamim. Which implies kasabah b'mishamasna p'sidi. Obviously, then Rav Chisda must hold that they are actually arguing within mishamasna itself, within the lashon shamta. That Rav Akiva would hold that might be because that's what he said. He said mishamasna. That Rav Akiva would be the one who holds that you're machmir, just to be on the safe side, and then Abanan would be meikel. And he's saying, don't worry, nobody holds like Rav Akiva. Because according to Abaye's explanation, there wouldn't be a question in the first place because even Rav Akiva wouldn't have a problem with mishamasna.
Why don't they ask him what was his intention?
Because the intention aside, if he used words that are not a valid neder, then it's not a valid neder.
We're discussing exactly what we're talking about.
Right, but if he used a word like mishamasna, if we're saying that mishamasna is not a valid neder, even if the guy says I meant to make a valid neder, okay, well then remake it in proper words. But what you just said doesn't help. You know, also, when you say also the kamei of chister, we don't necessarily mean that Ahu Gavra, the one who made the neder, is the one who came. It could be it's the other way around. Maybe the son of Rabbi Yehuda Abba is coming to the chachamim to ask, you know, this guy made a neder not to benefit from my nechassim. What should I do? Is his neder in fact valid? Am I allowed to allow him? Yes. Having said that, by the way, the Rambam does paskin according to Rabbi Akiva. He does say that if a person says he says menudani loch, then in fact it means the other guy is not allowed to go within his four amos, and the rivet has a problem with him based on our Gemara.
Because on the face of it, we're saying
that nobody's concerned about Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Okay, so one possible answer is, look, I mean, we had Abaya and we had Rav Chista. Fine, Rav Chista is saying that nobody's concerned about Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Abaya never said that. And according to Abaya, if you say Menudani Loch, then you do have Rabbi Akiva would hold that you're also. So fine.
His reasoning is because he
says that given that the Mishnah used the word menudani loch, then there's no reason to think that there's no reason to think that Rabbi Akiva is talking about Mishamasna or not. Okay, since we talked about the concept of nidui, of excommunication, so now the Gemara is going to go off on a tangent a little bit about some of the dinim of nidui. This is we learned some of these dinim actually last year in Moed Katan. So this is going to be a reprise, not totally, but it's going to cover a little bit of the same ground. Yeah. Amar Rabbi Ilah Amar Rav nidog funav. If Reuven puts Shimon under nidui in his presence, he actually says to Shimon's face, "You are in nidui."
But we said we cannot put someone in nidui because
he doesn't take a nidui. No. We said that a person can't put himself in nidui. Although actually, we'll address that soon. We'll see a case if he can. But what we're talking about is over here, for example, the Rambam lists 24 different cases that a person can be put in nidui for. We're going to learn one of them in a minute.
So, by himself.
No, but the point is, Reuven says to Shimon, you are in nidui. You were over on one of the things that makes you high of nidui.
He can
be a chacham. Yeah, he would be a chacham. Usually you'd be a chacham, yeah. And it, so, but he
or
does
not.
It.
Or not necessarily.
Well, so he does it to Shimon's face. Ein maturim lo elav afanav. Then you can only be matur neder also in his presence. Okay, you know what? Let's. By the way, to go back a second to this matter of to this matter of shamta. So since we just said in the Gemara over here, the Ran points out, if we just said in the Gemara over here that if someone says I'm under shamta from your nechassim, and we're saying that doesn't change anything, he's still allowed to benefit. That implies that somebody who is under nidui, does that imply then that if somebody is under nidui, that you're still allowed to have anah from the chasim and him from yours. So the Ran talks about various possibilities. There may be a difference whether a private person put him in nidui, or whether a plain basin put him in nidui, or whether a basin had gavra. There can be differences. There can be differences in those kinds of things. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. But we see from that, by the way, that even a hedyot, even a simple person, can put somebody in nidui. Actually, we learned in Mard Cotton, we had a case over there where Rebbe's maidservant saw somebody hitting his grown son, where it's a matter of lifnei iver because the son is old enough to hit back, and she put him in nidui. So you see that even a hedyot.
Anyone can put anybody else.
If it's one of the proper circumstances. In the Rambam gives a list of 24 cases where a person should be in nidui, and one of them is actually if you put somebody in nidui when they don't deserve it. So it's something that has to be wielded very carefully.
That stresses my question as to how come anyone can put somebody else in nidui.
That's the point. You can only do it if you have one of the valid reasons. If I go over to somebody here in Shul and I say you're in nidui for no particular reason, then I myself would be subject to nidui for that. Chas v'shalom. I'm another mishenei chay of nidui. Is that I'm in Washington.
So the Rabbanan didn't come with a takana that only they can put
no.
nidui.
No, and we're going to see in a second that there are cases when he shouldn't. Wait, you know what? Let's look. So nidog b'fanav. So if a person puts somebody else in nidui in his presence, in material la'el b'fanav, then you should only be matur it in his presence. In the presence, no, in the presence of the actual person that you put in near you. So why is that? Yeah, so okay, so there's a few different reasons that Mefarshim give. The Ran brings over here one possible reason is because if he did it in his presence, then it makes it much more powerful, and therefore you need to have his presence there in order to be matter it. The Ran himself says, I don't like that reason. The reason is because of Chashad. What's going to happen? Shimon knows he's been put in Nidri. Later on, you're going to go, when Shimon has left, you're going to go and be matter the Nidri. What's going to happen? Shimon's not going to know about it. He's going to see that everybody is treating him like normal again. He's going to think, he's going to be chosh at them, that he's going to be chosh at them, that they either he's going to think a nidui doesn't really count for anything, or he's going to be chosh at these people that they're not following what the chachamim say. As opposed to, if it was shaloi b'fanav, then he figures, okay, you know what, the same way as I would put a nidui, not in my presence, then I might have been, they might have been master, not in my presence. So those are the reasons the Ran gives. And he adds, based on that if they inform him, then fine, it doesn't have to be Bafanov. If they put him in Nidri Bafanov, and afterwards they were Matur Shalai Bafanov, but then they send somebody to inform him, and they send him a letter or whatever, then that would be good enough. That's the Ran. Tosfos gives a different reason, that it's for his cover, that you embarrassed him to his face, so you should be Matur to his face. Okay. Anyway. So if you did it b'fanav, then you have to be matur in b'fanav. Nidahu shalai b'fanav, but if you put him in nidui, not in his presence, matur in lebe b'fanav ben shalai b'fanav, then you can be matur him, whether it's in his presence or not. Amar v'chanan, amar rav, Rebbe, hashemeh haskaras Hashem ipi chaveiro. If somebody hears, if one person hears another person saying Hashem's name for no good reason, sorech l'nadoyse, he has to put him in nidui. The imloy nidahu who asked me yehi nidri, and so there we see an example, by the way, where a private person should put somebody else in nidri. The imloy nidahu, but if the imloy nidahu, if he did not put him in nidri, who asked me yehi nidri, then the person himself who heard it should be subject to nidri, which the Ram says doesn't mean he's automatically in nidri; it means he deserves nidri. But there, the Rambam, by the way, the Rambam summarizes it in Hilchos Shavuos. He says that any time you hear somebody saying Shem Shemayim Levatala, what you should do is, and we'll see that actually from the Gemara in a few lines over here. You should put him in Nidri and then immediately be matter it. You have to immediately be matter it because otherwise everybody's going to go around in Nidri. Unfortunately, many people are very careless with just using Hashem's name, Levatala.
So,
Yudke Vavke would know there's more. No, we're talking about Adnai or Elikim or whatever, any of the Seamus Shane and Rukhakim.
And if a person puts someone in Nidui, meaning what is
he? Well, he says
to him.
So there's various levels of Nidui. I mean, the basic of it is we learned in Moed Cotton various dinim that apply to somebody who is in Nidui. What did we have over there? That basically a person in Nidri has to act like an oval to a certain extent.
You know, done by one person.
Yeah, but that's the thing. So you can't put the person in Nidri and then leave him in Nidri until they actually come to base and master it, because they're not going to listen anyway, and then they're just going to be over on that. So you master it right away, but you put him in Nidri and then you master it in order to show them how severe it is. And the Rambam also says this is only if they do it for Mezid, not if they do it for Shogig. If they do it for Shogig, then they're not Chayav Nidui, and if you were to put them in Nidui, then you were back to that you put somebody in Nidui when you weren't supposed to, which we had a story about that in Moed Katan also, by the way, where we had one of the Chachamim saw somebody, I don't remember the details of the story exactly, but one of the Chachamim saw somebody doing something, and he said, he saw him stealing or something, and he said, you deserve Nidui. And the guy said, on the contrary, you know, fine, maybe I'm stealing, I'm chayiv to pay back or whatever, I'm not chayiv nidri, on the contrary, you should be chayiv nidri for putting me in nidri when I'm not supposed to. And then the guy disappeared, and the chacham had no idea who it was, so now he has a problem, he's in nidri, and he doesn't know who put him in nidri, he can't go to him to be master it, so he goes to the basti, he has to go to the nafti, he has to go to the nafti for them to be master it. So a person hears of Torah Hashem from somebody else, he should put him in Nidri, the Imlo Nidro who asked me Yehib in Nidri. Then Shulchan Aruch brings, I think, the Ramah says that nowadays we're makel on that, because again, you know, it's gotten to the point you can't really go around telling people all the time, you're in Nidri, I'm after you, because, you know, yeah. What's so bad about mentioning Hashem's name unnecessarily? Any place where the mention of Hashem's name is found there frequently without good reason, then there poverty is found. How is that? The Ram says, because you have a pasuk that says, "V'chol amokam asher azkir eshmi," any place where Hashem says, where I authorize my name to be said, "Ovei elecha ovei achticha," then I'll come to you and bless you. So, mikal hei nata shemei alav. From the positive, you infer the negative. If, in a place where Hashem does not authorize his name to be said and said, then there won't be a bracha, there'll be poverty. Exactly what it sounds like, poverty, the people become poor. For example, a bracha l'atala. Or, for example, so there's actually a big discussion among the Achronim to what extent this applies to names of Hashem in other languages. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, for example, takes a very hard line on it. He says, for example, it's very common, apparently, in his time, for people to say to each other, like, "God should punish you," or, you know, what the equivalent in Yiddish or whatever. And he says you're not allowed to do that. It's Moiti Shem Shemayim Levatala. Other Achronim are more makel on it. They say that they say you shouldn't do it, but we're not talking about the severe kind of thing about Yehei V'Nidui that we're talking about from Or Gemara. That applies primarily to names of Hashem and Lashon Kodesh. Anyway, the Ran brings another reason also what the connection is between mentioning Hashem's name, Levatala, and poverty. There's actually a pasuk in connection with a pasuk that describes what happens to a person who swears falsely that a fire comes out from Shemayim and destroys his entire house. So
when you swear in court, they ask you, do you
They swear, have you swear in Hashem's name, or on a sefer Torah, or a tefillin, or what have you, yeah.
No, they don't ask you to swear in Hashem's name. They ask you to swear.
It depends what kind of shvur. There's a shvur deraisa, there's a shvur derabanan, there's a shvur tesis. But a shvur deraisa, yes, they'll have you hold a sefer Torah, or a tefillin, or what have you.
Right.
And they'll, yeah.
But in a civil court, in America.
In civil court, so okay, they'll have you swear on a Bible, or whatever, I don't know. Ba'anius kemisa, and furthermore, you should know, being poor is like being dead. Shenema, kimesu kol anashim, as the pasuk says, when Moshe is going to return from Yisrael's house back to Mitzrayim to start the Makkos, the Eivish tells him, don't worry, all the people who are after you are dead. And who are those people? Who are those people? Dostan and Aviram. Now, they weren't dead. They were still very much alive many years later. They were the ones who mastered on him originally. So what do we mean, kimesu, that they became poor? They mastered on Moshe after he killed the mystery overseer. So the Ran and all the other Mepharshim point out of it here. Later on in the Masechta, the Gemara describes four kinds of people who are Choshev Kemes. Four kinds of people who are as if they were dead. Poor, Mesora, dead, and childless.
Dead?
No, not dead. Sorry. Let me try that again. Poor, blind, Mesora, and childless. That's what it is. All of them are like dead. There are various reasons why they're considered like dead, for one thing, because they can't be mashpia to other people, whatever it is, anyway. So they go through. So why don't we say that one of these other things happened to Dustin Aviram? So they go through like this. Dustin Aviram can't have been blind, because years later, during the argument, during the whole machlokas of Korach, they say that when Moshe tries to call them to talk it over with them, to come to a meeting of the minds, they tell him, "We're not going to bother. We don't bother wanting to listen to you. Even if you were to gouge out our eyes, we're not going to come." Mashma, they still had their eyes. Can't be that they were mitzrayim, he says, because the pasuk also describes that they were swallowed up bekeret kol Yisrael, among all the Jewish people, in the midst of the people. If they were mitzrayim, they would have had to be outside the machna. Which leads, by the way, to a big, interesting discussion. So who says they couldn't have been Mitzorayim before Matan Torah? The din is that a Mitzorah from before Matan Torah remains Tahar after Matan, if it's Torah still persists after Matan Torah. So maybe they could have been Mitzorayim and Mitzrayim, and still they're allowed to be Bekeret Kol Yisrael. There's a lot of give and take about, a lot of articles about this among the Achronim, about the pros and cons of it. For one thing, the Jews were all, Rabbi Yeshaya Pick Berlin, who wrote large parts of Masoret HaShas and various other Sfarim on the Gemara, was a Goyin from the times of the Chassam Sofer. He wants to say that, look, you know, it says that all the Jews were healed of all their ailments at Matan Torah. So therefore, if they were Mitzrayim beforehand, then they wouldn't have been after Matan Torah. But everything came back after the Chet Ha'Egel. So therefore, fine. If they were Mitzrayim from before, they would have been Mitzrayim again after the Chet Ha'Egel. That's already after the Torah was given. Maybe Tameh. If they're Tameh, then they got to be sent out. The fact that they're not shows that they weren't Mitzrayim before. And there's a whole lot of rishos among various other Achronim picking apart his argument. Anyway. And what about children? So first of all, some of Oshim bring, the fact is there are psukim that mention when they were punished, when they were swallowed up into the ground, it mentions that they had children. Second of all, as a practical matter, the fact, even if let's say all their children would die, what's the Eivish telling Moshe? Don't worry about them, they have no more influence at the court of Paroi, and therefore they can't harm you. Mela, if they're blind or mitzrayim or poor, then fine, they lost their influence. Just because their children died wouldn't cause them to lose their influence at court. So obviously, kimesu can't mean that. So therefore, by elimination, we're left with that they had to become poor.
Children was not really...
They wouldn't rent. V'tanya, and one more thing, it says in a braisa, kol mokam shenasna chachamim einayim, any place where the chachamim put their eyes on a person in anger, as we find in various places in Shas, oy misa oy oyni, either it causes death or it causes poverty. So because of all of this, so because of this association that poverty and then death are such serious things, and because we see that poverty is associated with haskaras shem shemayim levatala, that's the reason why a person does that, you should put him in nidri. And we'll continue tomorrow with how you actually do it. So you put him in nidri and then you master him right away. I'll tell you, by the way, one Goliath of Eretz, that they say the Shoyal Meshiv one time had. The Shoyal Meshiv, I forget his personal name, but he was an important rav about 150, 200 years ago.
Germany?
No, in Poland, I think. Poland, Ukraine, whatever. One time a poor person came to his house asking for tzedakah. And so the Shoyal Meshiv said, okay, I need to go into the next room to get my wallet and I'll give you some money. By the time he came back out to his front office, he found the guy had stolen the clock and ran away. And the Shoyal Meshiv said, now I understand the comparison between an Oni and a Mess. The comparison is, just like a Mess is not supposed to be left alone, you always have to have a Shoyma with him, so an Oni also shouldn't be left alone.
Exactly.